Hey, Northeast Pennsylvania, it's Rob O'Donnell here on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that free Odyssey app. It is 308, 70 degrees here on this Tuesday, April 22nd, 2025, Earth Day, as they like to call it for us mere mortal earthlings. It's Earth Day. Hopefully you did something good today. I took a walk around my property, picked up some stuff, looked at my 14 or so fruit trees in my orchard. They're starting to bloom, looking good. Picked up some broken branches and clipped some broken branches from the rough winter we had. Looked at my blueberry patch. So they look like they're coming in pretty well. I got to put up some netting sometime soon. Our weeping cherries are in full bloom finally. A little bit behind schedule, but they're in full bloom now. And the rhododendrons have their nice pink flowers that my wife likes so much out there. So that's what I did on today, this Earth Day. Beautiful day outside, sunny. Get outside, get some vitamin D. Do something around your property. Do something to help the environment in your little way. See? It's not hard. You don't have to be forced to do it. Do it because you want to do it. You don't do it because some politician tells you you should while they jet around in a private jet. But hopefully you're doing something for Earth Day. There's projects going on all over the place. It's easy to get involved if it's something you want to do. Listen, go to your local park in whatever municipal place you live and just go for a walk in the park. It's as easy as that. See, you celebrated Earth Day. It wasn't hard. Walk around your front yard. Do whatever makes you happy. Don't do it because others tell you to, or that look at me attitude that we've come to so much on social media. So lots of things going on today. Lots of things to talk about. I did hear that Lackawanna County was in a courtroom today on this Earth Day, not celebrating the outside. And there was a pretty lengthy hearing back and forth about the county commissioner and who can be chosen, who can't be chosen, who gets to choose, who doesn't get to choose. The bottom line is we don't have a third county commissioner. The county of Lackawanna County is not working at full strength as far as commissioners go. There's a dispute legally on if this even has the authority to be in a courtroom right now, one of the things being discussed today. But what was noticed in a financially troubled county, Lackawanna County, because I think we can assume ourselves as that, millions of dollars in debt. We're on a hiring freeze under a management plan to help us with our fiscal management. So, yeah, I think it's easy to say that we are a financially struggling county. When we had millions of dollars unpaid bills last year coming into this year. Well, you know, there were just under a dozen county employees, high ranking, some elected, some not, sitting in a courtroom today fighting over who should have the power to do what. And this is basically all a grasp effort of the county. Is he even the majority commission, the chairman anymore? I guess he is, because there has been no vote to change that. The majority chairman's last-ditch effort to hold on to whatever power there is, and he sees that power dwindling. But the thing is, and the thing that was brought to my attention is, this could go on for a while. This could go on for a while, and I don't see how this court, the Court of Common Pleas, not the Court of Common Pleas, the Lackawanna County Court, could let this go down this road. Now, the argument, a county board of commissioners can only act as a board. They cannot act unilaterally. It means not one board member, or county commissioner member, can institute legal authority to initiate a lawsuit. Now, what they're arguing, and what I mean by they, it's the county solicitor under the guidance of Chairman Bill Gaughan, is saying that the county solicitor has the authority to initiate a lawsuit on behalf of Lackawanna County. No, the county solicitor has the duty under the direction of the Board of Commissioners to initiate a lawsuit. But they're saying that's not the case, that he has the authority to do such. Now, here's a thing. If this holds true, what if the county solicitor doesn't agree with any of the board members, the commissioners at all, and decides that it's in the best interest of the county to initiate a lawsuit against the wishes of all the county commissioners? He could just institute a lawsuit at the taxpayer's expense. I think the state attorney general would have an issue with that because you're setting a precedent that any of the county's solicitors can just initiate a lawsuit if they don't agree with something. No, they act as an advisor and at the direction of the Board of Commissioners. So I don't see how that stands and makes precedent. And if it does, I could, and I hope the state would get involved as far as the attorney general, because the last thing the state needs is rogue solicitors having the authority to initiate lawsuits whenever they want. Because does it stop there? Can a school board solicitor then initiate lawsuits whenever they want without the direction or against the direction of the school board? It opens up a can of worms that just cannot exist. And that just goes to show how ridiculous this argument is. And we're paying all these people, I think there were 8 or 10 in the courtroom today, to not do their job serving the people of the county of Lackawanna in their normal job functions, but to fight out to keep this man in power. And that's all this is. He sees it diminishing through his fingertips, and he's doing everything. But how long could this go on for? Now, I've been watching the county commissioners' meetings, and most of what's going on is just normal business, course of business. You have to realize that 90% of the votes in the county commissioner's office is probably 3-0. There's that 10% where there's a conflict of who wants what. Now, that 10%, though, are normally the bigger items, like a budget, like the approving of a reassessment once it's finalized and the numbers are brought to fruition. We have a crisis without 3 board members when it comes to anything that's going to be not a unanimous vote. Now, this could go on if this board appeals and says, no, as per the law, this court, the 3 panel judges come and tell Gaughan and the county that they have the authority to choose who this commissioner is, and they choose who that commissioner is. Is there an appeal which delays this even further? How long does this go for? Does it go for weeks? Does it go for months? I mean, towards the end of the year, we're going to need a budget. You're going to need 3 county commissioners to have a budget unless there's an agreed upon budget, and I don't see one side bending that much to get an agreed upon budget with just 2 commissioners. So it truly puts us in a conundrum in Lackawanna County. But that's what happened today in court. It was a couple of hours they were there for. There's really no timeline on when this 3-judge panel is due to come. Both sides had their argument today. If there is an appeal, does the chairman of Lackawanna County have to post a bond for that appeal? If they say that, no, this is over with, here's your 3rd county commissioner, should he be personally liable to put up a bond for an appeal process? So it's interesting where that goes, but that took place today. I don't know if there's going to be much in the paper tomorrow about it, but I would hope there was a reporter in the courtroom today. But that's where Lackawanna County stands. So we'll see what happens there. And again, I got that information a little before coming on the air today, so I just wanted to update people for someone who was sitting in the courtroom. It's interesting that this, we talked about it the day it happened, this Florida State University shooting that took place, and that, I only at the time thought there was one survivor of Parkland shooting in high school that was at FSU during this shooting. Turns out there was a few. There was a few that are Florida State University students that were also at the Parkland school in Broward County when that school shooting took place. And they're starting to come out and talk about it. And one of the things that have already happened is a legislator in Florida has already come out and talked about changing the law in Florida. In 2018, the measure raising the age to 21 years old was in response to the Parkland shooting, where a 19-year-old shooter currently faced life in prison. Now, the talk about new laws, and again, this was a 20-year-old FSU student who took his mother's lawfully possessed firearm, who was also in law enforcement. No additional law as far as age on the age of someone possessing, purchasing that gun changes that. And we've seen it more times than not that doing something seems to, rather than something that actually addresses the issue together. And unfortunately, in something like this, that becomes difficult. At this point, it's a discussion that needs to be take place. But when you see the discussion of, okay, we let individuals join the military at 18, you're voting at 18, you're considered an adult at 18, but you know, here's the restrictions you have on purchasing a firearm. Here's the restrictions you have of drinking alcohol. Now, some might say it's the same thing. Listen, we made the drinking age 21, and you know, we've seen positive results from that. Yes, but like we talked about the other day, where a judge turned down and agreed with the tech companies that it's not up to the tech companies to limit social media for children under 16. It's a parent's job to do that because of a child's First Amendment right. So it's interesting how in that case, and again, I disagreed with it on its face value, but then when I talked you through it, I ended up agreeing with it at the end. That is a parent's responsibility. We shouldn't have another law to replace the job of a parent, an involved guardian for that child. And the court said that because this did indeed violate their children under 16's First Amendment right of freedom of speech, expression. It's a parent's job to monitor and limit that. Well, isn't this sort of the same thing? And drinking is not in the Constitution. So it brings up a constitutional argument. Do we want to abide by it or do we not? So when we have these discussions about ages and who could purchase a firearm and who could own a firearm, it's interesting that when these shootings take place, everybody seems to, on gun control side, wants to go towards long rifles, AR-style weapons. Well, that was not used here. It's not used in a lot of cases. Matter of fact, it's only used in 2% of violent crime across America. Handguns are the most commonly used when it comes to homicide deaths by firearm. Now they want to talk about how firearms is the number one cause of death for children. Well, not when you remove suicide. And again, some preventable, some not. If they're not going to commit suicide one way, and if they're intent on committing suicide, they will find a way to do it. And if that is that the duty of, again, a family, a parent, a guardian, to step in and say, okay, there is a mental issue here, there's depression, there's something going on, we obviously have to take more steps when it comes to firearm security, even having them in the house, putting them in another family member's house, temporarily removing them. And this is done all the time by responsible people. You know, plenty of combat vets, law enforcement, people in all sorts of communities, even in the medical community, nurses and trauma centers, to where when they've battled depression or PTSD because of an incident or something, you know, loved ones have come in and removed all the firearms from the house, even long guns, even hunting rifles or shotguns or things you would not consider something to self-harm with, but it does. There is something going on. And when you look at when this all started to spike, these mass shootings, and all of them, not just schools, but schools included. There's a correlation with the internet. There's a correlation with social media. There's a correlation with all these other things, including mental health, that had skyrocketed during these times. Not that there hasn't been mental health issues all along. And again, it comes back to the involvement, the awareness of the nucleus around people. And it doesn't have to necessarily be your family. It doesn't necessarily have to be children. It's your friend circle, your family circle, your spouse, your significant other, your children. I mean, in all honesty, I've had children of people in the military and law enforcement reach out to me saying, hey, my mom or my dad, something's not right. Yeah, I think maybe they need to talk to someone because they see it. And as children, a lot of times they're not equipped. They're equipped with the love of a child, but some they call out for help. And it's interesting that that we're not focusing more on that. And I think we do need it. And I understand there's broken homes. I understand there's different situations in homes. I understand there's a lot of people by themselves out there. And that's why I say that nucleus around everyone. Hopefully someone has something around them. It's not going to account for all problems, but we've become so blinded and fixated on our own lives, our own self, our own journeys, our social media presence, what we're doing, what people think of us on the World Wide Web that never even met us. It's an interesting conundrum we found ourselves in. And with AI and everything we've talked about, this stuff is only going to get crazier. So just an opening thought today. It's 3:25 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show. Jake, every time I hear that song, I think of them loading up the weapons for Black Hawk Down before they went into Moog.
I do too.
Yep. Good stuff there. So if you are attending Penn State University, one of the satellite campuses, I guess you're not going to know anything for a little longer. Final exams and commencement are rapidly approaching. Activities of great significance for the communities. As per the university president, Neely Bendapudi, released a statement Thursday updating a timeline of the decision for campus closures. She was appointed as president to Penn State in May of 2022. And she said it won't be till later that an announcement will be made. In February, it was announced that out of the 19th Commonwealth campuses, 12 are on the chopping block to be potentially closed, including the campuses in Hazleton, Schuylkill, Haven, Wilkes-Barre, and Scranton. Of the university's 19 Commonwealth campuses, only Schuylkill campus has seen an enrollment increase since 2020. Now, she did say that no campuses will close before the end of the 26-27 school year. But it appears that we're not going to know anything for a little more time. Following the board meeting, there will be an immediate communication, as well as other school leaders, the statement read. They will also provide in-person and virtual opportunities for students, faculty, and staff to come together to ask questions. She have decided to delay the announcement of campus decisions until mid-May. So I understand the uneasiness, the anxiety that this gives a lot of students. You know, even with another year, hopefully, you know, you finish up or you can finish up. But I think it's once this information comes out, it'll obviously affect enrollment to drop even further in these schools. The PASHE schools, this Pennsylvania State Higher Education System, which was, Bloomsburg, Shippensburg, Westchester, Clarion. I think there's 13 of them altogether. When they combined the three out west, which was one of my daughter's schools in Bloomsburg and a few of them here, it affected a lot of the schools. As a matter of fact, speaking to my daughter who was in Clarion, not only did she not care for nor want the school to come together and change their name to Penn West, I think. But when she graduated, it was officially Penn West. And when we went to the bookstore to get the frame for her diploma on her graduation day, we asked, did you have any of the old Clarion frames? Like, you know, the nice mahogany frames with the border that says, you know, the university's name and such. Well, they did. They did. And it turns out they were 50% off because the school no longer existed. But my daughter, since she went to Clarion University for 3 years out of the 4 years, wanted that's where she decided to go. That's where she wanted to take her nursing program. She opted for that frame for her college diploma. So it just goes to show that the dedication people have. And I'm sure if you're going to a Penn State this campus or Penn State that campus, that's your take too. Even though your diploma says Penn State University, and I've had that discussion with my kids when that was an opportunity to go to Penn State. You know, do as much as you can here locally. You save on room and board. You could live at home. You can commute. It's, you look at the big picture as far as, you know, when we're talking about student debt and, you know, the student debt payment deferral being stopped now from 2020. You know, that was always a big conversation with my children about the debt that they take on. You know, what kind of career do you want? Is it worth the investment in the education? And thankfully, due to that open dialogue and communication, it was. But it looks like if you go to a Penn State satellite campus sometime in mid-May, you should find out your answer to which campuses are closing. And it doesn't look good for a lot of them. Maybe that changes, maybe it doesn't, but it doesn't appear that that's on the horizon. It's 3:33 here at WILK. It's time for the news with Paul Michaels. We're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So 4 years of classes, thousands of dollars in tuition, one freshly minted diploma, all to be outdone by a chatbot. As artificial intelligence floods the workplace, nearly half of Gen Z job seekers say their degrees have already been made obsolete by the rise of generative AI tools like chatbot. And they're wondering why they even bothered hitting the books in the first place. Well, it's interesting. It's a waste of time and money, according to respondents of a new Indeed report, which found 49% of Gen Z job hunters think their college education has lost value in the job market thanks to AI. Only about one-third of millennials feel the same way, and just one in five boomers have similar regrets, as the CIO Dive reports. The tech tide isn't turning anytime soon. Businesses are adopting AI faster than some can say resume rewrite. And young workers, especially fresh out of college grads, are feeling the squeeze most. Indeed's new report, conducted by a Harris poll, and based on the responses of 772 U.S. workers and job seekers with at least an associate's degree, reveals the generational divide in career confidence. Younger applicants are more likely than their older counterparts to feel that AI has rendered their skills and schooling useless. Even worse, college degrees are rapidly losing priority in job listings, with companies increasingly dropping the four-year requirement. Half of Gen Z now say college was a poor investment altogether. Now, this is something that you need to really look into. When it came time to college, for college, we sat down with our children, each one at the time, and said, you know, what are your plans? What do you want to go to college for? What is your end game? Is it worth the investment? Do you going to get the return on your investment with what you do? Now, that's a hard conversation to have with a 17 or 18-year-old. But you at least need a plan. And if that plan changes, that's fine. And it oftentimes does. You know, I think my daughter in the nursing program started out with 120. I think they ended up graduating 18. So plans change. I get it. Plans change. But you need at least a plan. You need a blueprint. You need a guide. You need a map to figure out, this is something I want to do, and this is my plan to get there. Once I graduate, will I make enough money? Will it be worthwhile to not only live, but to cover the debt that I have, that I incurred? And we're going to attempt to make that as minimal as possible. That was the plan also from the start. But simply going to college because it's the 13th, 14th, 15th, and 16th year of school is not a plan. Adding another year or two because you decided to party too much is not a plan. And if you really talk to some of the people in the next story we're going to talk about, their student debt and how it's crushing them, talk through what they did through college, the decisions they made. What did they do during college to minimize that debt? And it clearly comes, and not everybody, but a picture commonly comes to view that they were play now, pay later. Play now, pay later. Play now, pay later. Things change. Times change. Economies change. The job market changes. You and I change. So it's something you need to constantly reevaluate, reassess, and figure out, because it is not a small debt. And we're going to talk about that when we come back. But it's interesting that simply because AI makes things easier, and it does. If you use AI properly, if you use ChatGPT and these other programs, it makes things a lot quicker. It makes things a lot easier. It takes around late. It doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to do those things. It doesn't mean that it's useless you learned how to do research on your own, how to cite sources, and how to investigate. We have the top GPS and digital computers in the military, but they still are taught celestial navigation. Why? Because maybe they have to. Maybe a pilot ejects and he's somewhere in a hostile area and that's all he has because he can't send a communication because they'll track it. So simply because you learn something and this little machine in your hands makes it easy in a split second to do it, doesn't mean it was useless that you learned how to do it. You should always increase your skill set regardless of what technology does for you. We have forklifts to pick heavy things up. Doesn't mean you should be able to pick heavy things up within your capacity as well. We have machines to do things and carts and all this stuff. It doesn't mean you should be in the best physical shape that you can be. You should always be working on your skill sets, regardless of that, is physically and mentally, and know how to do these things. So it's a shame that our younger generation feels that they learned this stuff, and now because a computer tells it to them, they're sorry they learned it. Well, that's a pretty bad perspective on life. Maybe that's one of the reasons it's hard to get jobs, too. It's 4:44 here at WILK. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. Going to have the Bloomberg Money Minute coming up in just over a minute here. But student loans in default are about to start their payments again. Now, this has been on hold since 2020. Yeah, you heard me right. 2020 is when these, due to COVID. And now they're saying that you're going to have to pay your student loan. And if you don't, you'll be referred to debt collections, the education department says. Currently, roughly 5.3 million borrowers in default on their federal loans and are going to have to start paying. If they don't, they will garnish their wages and other methods to get it. But here's the thing. You had 5 years. 5 years to at least save. And I get it. It was frozen. You didn't have to make a payment. It doesn't mean you shouldn't set it aside. If you put $100 a month aside for the past 5 years, you would have $6,000 to pay down your debt. Now, I understand for some of you that's a drop in the bucket, but it doesn't mean you're not responsible for it. And I'm sorry. You're lucky. Most people never get 5-year reprieve on their commitments, especially financial commitments. So it's time to start paying up. 3:50, time for the Bloomberg Money Minute. We're back with the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio. So I saw this story, and it was funny because my wife does it all the time, and I laugh every time she does it, but it's cute. I guess it's being polite. But saying please and thank you to ChatGPT and other AI or voice-activated algorithms cost tens of millions of dollars, OpenAI CEO Sam Altman admits. OpenAI CEO Sam Altman admitted that the simple courtesies, such as saying please and thank you to his company's ChatGPT bots, are surprisingly expensive, costing the firm, therefore us, substantially sums in electricity expenses. Altman made the revelation when the user of a social media platform, X, asked about the financial impact of politeness towards AI might have on OpenAI's operating costs. I found myself doing this as well. When you're going into Gronk or ChatGPT, and you, can you please do this? And that extra word in there, this program needs to take it, absorb it, understand it, and process it. So the more words you put in your commands, the longer those commands are, even if you're just being cute with your human nature, it uses more power, uses more electricity, and costs more. And it's funny because when we use, the Siri, Alexa, or Google, or whatever we use in our house, my wife always thanks it when it gives us the answer. And it's pretty funny. I'm like, you just thank the computer. But Altman responded by noting the loss was tens of millions of dollars well spent, adding cryptically, you never know. Don't piss off the bots, right? When they take over, when they finally take over, they're going to be like, you were one of the nice ones. We got voice recognition on you. So maybe they're onto something. Chatbots such as ChatGPT run a large language models, LLMs, which rely on extensive capitulation infrastructure hosted in data centers. These models require thousands of high-performance GPUs, graphics processing units, to operate efficiently. The GPUs perform vast amount of parallel processing to intercept prompts and generate responses in real time. Powering these data centers demands enormous amount of electricity. We've talked about this, especially with the new infrastructure they're looking to put around our area. It's estimated that generating a single AI-written response, such as a short email or paragraph, can consume as much as 0.14 kilowatt-hours of energy, comparable to keeping 14 LED bulbs lit for 1 hour. How long do you think it's going to take Democrats to look to tax this in some way? Now, our energy is already taxed. This data centers that's running these processes and using this extra electricity, how long before you think someone's going to say, well, if you use AI this amount of time or this much on your smartphone, on your computer, on your tablet, we're going to charge you this much more because you use that much more power? I wouldn't discount it. When scaled across billions of interactions daily, the cumulative energy use becomes significant. Globally, data centers already account for about 2% of total electricity consumption. With the rapid expansion of AI applications and increased demands for generative AI services like ChatGPT, experts warn that this figure could rise sharply in the coming years. While some might view the courteous interactions with chatbots as unnecessary, several AI experts argue that politeness significantly shapes AI interactions positively. Curtis Beavers, a director of design team at Microsoft Copilot, has advocated for respectful prompts, stating they help generate respectful collaborative outputs. According to Beavers, polite phrasing doesn't merely reflect good manners, but it actively influences how AI replies, setting a more constructive and professional interaction tone. Well, I guess if you want virtual reality, if you want artificial intelligence, you have to treat it as such. I've kind of narrowed down my prompts or commands when I use ChatGPT or I use AI to study something or get me some research on something. But I find myself doing it, throwing in a please every now and then. Can you please do this? The more I use voice recognition to ask for things, I've kind of cut it to the chase. But just by out of habit, it's like sending a text or an email. You don't want to send a polite. But it's funny because when I was reading this story, I immediately thought of Lisa because she always, she'll ask for anything. She sets timers all the time. If she's cooking or doing something, she's working out, she'll ask either Google Alexa to set a timer. And you know, when it says, okay, timer's set for such and such, you go, thank you, Google. Thank you, Alexa. And I'm like, you really talking to the speakers, the self-speakers, the smart speakers? It's funny. It's 4 o'clock here at WILK. We'll be back.